Hello everyone, welcome back to We Love PMO, the show where we simplify the complex world of project, program and PMO management. I'm your host Sarah, and if this is your first time tuning in, welcome. Don't forget to hit that follow or subscribe button so you don't miss any notifications for when a new episode is released. And today's episode is about a component of project and program management that I absolutely love and I'm so passionate about, and that is risk management. I'll hold my hands up and I'll admit I am a bit of a geek that loves process and the nitty-gritty details of risk analysis and issue management. But before I go off on a tangent about why I love risk management so much, let's talk about what it actually is and why it is so important. So, what is risk management? Now, if we go by the MOR, which stands for Management of Risk, they define it as the coordinated direction and control of an organisation undertaken to protect and create value in the face of risk. Now, risk management, it's not solely for projects or programmes, it's for corporate and BAU, business as usual, functions. Risks can be even negative threats to objectives and, surprisingly, positive opportunities to objectives. Now, the key word there from a project or program management point of view is objectives. In whatever dynamic project environment you're working in, there will always be an element of uncertainty. But these uncertainties will only become a risk if they were to have an effect on the project or program objectives, should they materialise. Now, just to recap on what we mean by an objective means a goal or step on the way to meeting the aims, how you are going to achieve it. Objectives use specific statements which define measurable benefits. So, if a risk is not going to impact on project objectives, it's not a project risk. I'm going to be focusing on risk management in this session, but it's really important to flag that actually quite often, and I've seen it so many times across many different organisations, all the focus goes on risk and risk management and the issues get overlooked. But really, if there's an issue, that's where the focus needs to be. The main difference between an issue and a risk is an issue has occurred, but a risk is an event that could happen but hasn't yet. A risk can have a positive or negative impact on the program or project. It is vitally important to identify risks in advance and put in place mitigation plans. So I've explained what a risk is. So what is an issue? An issue is an unforeseen situation and it's happening right now, or it has happened. Something has gone wrong and or a decision needs to be made. They cannot be planned for and there is no probability attached to it. It is a certainty. So why is it so important? Without risk management, you are leaving your project, your program, your business or organisation exposed to a multitude of potential threats, financial instability, non-compliance, operational disruptions, and potentially reputational damage. And that absence of a structured risk management strategy and risk register makes you vulnerable to unforeseen events. You're at the mercy of uncertainties, putting your project or business viability and success in jeopardy. There's so many benefits to having a robust risk management process and strategy in place. Some benefits, for example, could be minimising disruptions, enhancing decision-making, resilience being enhanced, effective resource allocation, reduction in unwelcome surprises, improved visibility of risk, and greater focus on the things that matter. For risk management to be effective, risks need to be identified, they need to be assessed, and they need to be controlled. So what does the risk management process look like? Now, I'm going to talk through the MOR, risk management process, but there are a number of different ones out there which all follow a very similar way, just using different language. But I find the MOR version a very good one to work through. So we start off with defining the context and objectives. And what happens in this stage is we need to analyse and engage with the stakeholders of the project. We have to make sure from the get-go, so right at the beginning, before the project even got off the start line, are we all in agreement as a project team and with our key stakeholders, what the project aims, objectives, and the scope is? Once we have those nailed down, we can then have a look at the objectives. If you remember from earlier on, I mentioned how if the risk doesn't have an impact on objective, then we don't need to worry about that because it's not going to have an impact on the project objectives. So we need to agree in regards to those objectives, are any of those at risk and how could we measure them? We need to ensure that we understand what the risk tolerance is, whether that is within a project board level or actually what is the organisational or portfolio world's risk tolerance and describing the risk appetite. So that all takes part in the defining the context and the objectives. And it's so important that as the project progresses and things can change, the scope may change, we always go back round to all our project documentation and revisit, make sure that everything is still, it's valid, it's justifiable, you know, the project should go on. But have the objectives changed at all? Because if the objectives changed, then we need to go back round to some of those risks that had been identified and do they need updating? We then move on to identifying those threats and those opportunities. So we start to look at those opportunities, we start to look at the threats, and we start to agree who is going to own that risk. And we'll start to describe the risk as well. And as we describe the risk, I'm going to talk about this in more detail in a further episode, but it's so important that we use meta language. So we're using a language that everybody is using, regardless of what project team you're in or what team you may be in, if we're looking at business as usual or corporate level risks, that we all are writing our cause and our event, the actual risk description itself, the same way. So the language is the same. So once we've described what the risks are, and we understand the causes and the events and what the impact is going to be, and we've agreed who is actually going to own the risk, we then go on to the next stage. And this is where we need to prioritize the risks. So we need to assess the likelihood. We need to assess the size of the impact. We need to assess the proximity and or velocity, identify any leading indicators, and calculate an expected value. Now, when we talk about likelihood and consequences and impact, quite often most organisations and most projects will use a 5x5 matrix. And you choose a number from a likelihood perspective. So how likely it is. So a 1 would be, you know, going down very, very low, and as you get higher, the likelihood is getting higher, and then the impact's the same as well. 1 starts off low and 5 is up to like catastrophic. So you assess the likelihood and you choose that. So say it's a 3, and then the impact may be a 4, and you multiply it. So 4x3 would give you a score of a 12, which would give you a RAG rating of about an amber mid-level sort of risk. That is pre-mitigation, and I'll get into that in a bit further on about pre-mitigation and post-mitigation. And then we start to look at the proximity. So how, you know, if this risk was to materialize, how soon could that happen? Is this something that might actually could occur or is linked into maybe some tasks that are going to be happening over the next month? Or is it 6 months down the line? So we try to understand proximity of that risk occurring. We obviously identify leading indicators, but also try to understand an expected value. So does this risk have a financial impact to it, and can we quantify it? So once we've prioritised our risks, so there'll be a number of different ones, we then move on to assessing the combined risk profile. So this may be if you're working within a portfolio and you may have a number of projects or a number of programs, there may be a number of similar risks come together. Maybe they're working with the same stakeholder group, or maybe they're working with the same third-party supplier, and there's some risks around that. We can then look to aggregating those risks to a level of the decision. So I have a look at the combined risk profile. So if it's in a project and it's sat within a program, the program manager will look across the number of projects, understand how they will have an impact at the program objective level, and aggregate those up. So it could be from a project perspective, the risk profile may be really, really high. But from a program perspective, when they've looked at it sort of from that bird's eye level, it's actually a lower risk. Once you've had a look at the assessment of the combined risk profile, we then need to plan our responses. So we need to identify and assess what effective existing controls do we have in place. And when we talk about controls, these are things that exist already. So this could be maybe we have some policies or procedures in place, for example. We identify and cost justify what any proactive responses would be, and also reactive. So this is helping us with that financial quantification of a risk. We identify any secondary risks, and we appoint the risk action owner. So if the actions that need to take place from our planned response is different to who's going to own the risk, we need to make sure that A, that person's aware, B, they actually have the time capacity to do it, but it is clear that anybody who picks up that risk register, here's the owner of the risk, and this is the person that's the owner of the actions. So once we've got our responses planned, we then move on to our contingency. So we agree our time, our financial contingencies, and any business continuity plans that need to go in place. We then move on to monitoring and reporting progress. So yeah, we've identified a risk. We've identified some actions that need to go against this and some indicators. Well, what do we do with that now? Well, we need to actually monitor it. Are those actions that we've identified? So earlier on, when I was saying about the prioritization of the risks and assessing the likelihood and the size of the impact to give you that risk score, that's pre-mitigation. Post-mitigation is we have got those mitigating actions in place alongside our controls. Will that lower? And hopefully it should, unless it's a risk that we have to tolerate. What would that post-mitigation risk score be? And I'll get further in another episode. I'll talk about inherent and residual risk, which links to your mitigating actions. So once you've got those actions in place, if we undertake them and with those controls, how much does it reduce the risk score by? So that is all monitored, and the report, like a RAID report that was pulled together. So in a RAID report, you would have your risk, your assumptions, your issues and dependencies, and the progress against these is communicated and it's escalated up the chain. So if the risk is suddenly out of control within the project, it would escalate up to a program if it's in a program. And then if there's a portfolio in there, it'll go up to a portfolio. And depending on the type of risk it is, it may need to even escalate up to a corporate or trustees risk register. So once we've done our monitoring and we're reporting our progress against our risks, we then need to review and adapt. So we analyse the risk competence, define any adjustments to guidance necessary, and we go back round. It's a continuous circle. So you're constantly going around, rechecking your objectives, rechecking any new threats, opportunities. Okay, what about those existing threats? Are they still a high risk? Are they still a risk at all? What about the scores? Last month we said it's a 16. Is that still the case? Has anything happened? Have those actions that we said that we're going to do actually made any difference? Is there any further mitigation actions that we can put in? So you need to keep going back around that process. So that's a bit of an overview in regards to the risk management process. There's so much more that I could talk about it, but that's a wrap for today's episode. If you found it really helpful, or if there's a specific topic you'd like us to explore in future episodes, please let us know. Don't forget to hit the follow or subscribe button. In the next episode, I will be breaking down the three key elements of a risk description alongside my favourite risk identification techniques and tools. And we'll also talk a bit more in regards to the different options that you can choose in regards to how you're going to treat a risk. So don't forget to follow us on Instagram for further tips and details about project, program, PMO and risk management. If you want to expand your knowledge further in the world of project management, in the podcast description below, you will see details of our course Project Management Zero to Hero. So bye for now. Thanks for listening and see you on the next one. Bye.